You are now joining the Mandalorian Watch. I am your host, Alex Maxwell, and actually I'm flying solo today because we're doing a brand new series that will premiere on Patreon first, and then it will premiere on the regular feed, and it's called Legends of Mandalore. And so this new series is kind of a sequel to our Mandalorian History 101 episode. And you can kind of think of these episodes as level 500 class, right? So this is the diving into the specifics of the history of Mandalorians and their culture, people, battles, those type of things. And so this is going to be a lot of fun. These are going to be a little shorter episodes. That's why we're just flying solo on these. Like Mac will do one, I'll do one. We'll just kind of go back and forth and give you some really cool tidbits to just educate you guys on the Mandalorian, just have that conversation about Mandalorians, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So like I said, this is our first ever episode of the Legends of Mandalore. With each mini episode, we're going to take some time to discuss whether either an important figure from Mandalorian history, but sometimes even important battles or even a situation. A lot of these figures or battles are actually coming from legends, hence the name. And so while they're not canon, they definitely shape our understanding of Mandalorians and influence their portrayal. We will let you know on the outset whether something is considered legends or canon, because we'll definitely talk about some canon figures as well. But right now, honestly, there's just not a lot to go off of. So we're probably going to focus a lot more on legends material as we do these episodes. So today we are indeed in legends territory, and we're talking about someone from Mandalorian history named Candarus Ordo. You may be familiar with him from the Knights of the Old Republic game. And if you listen to the podcast, you know that is probably my favorite Star Wars game. I think I can speak for Mac in saying that it's his favorite Star Wars game. And I'm assuming probably a lot of your favorite Star Wars games as well. So you probably know who I'm talking about, but I want to give you some background on him and just the whole situation that we find him in when we're playing that game. So the Knights of the Old Republic takes place around 4,000 years before A New Hope. When we meet Candarus Ordo, he's working as an enforcer for a crime lord named Davik King on Terrace. So like we meet him, he doesn't really have any Mandalorian armor, but like right away, he just gives off that Mandalorian vibe. Like right away, when you meet this character, you in the back of your mind, he fills that role of Boba Fett. Like you just know he's connected to the Mandalorians. But how did he end up as an enforcer? So starting all the way back to the beginning, he was actually born on a Mandalorian planet named Ordo. And he is, of course, you guessed it, from a clan named Ordo. So he's Clan Ordo. One of the cool aspects about the Knights of the Old Republic games and even the comics by John Jackson Miller is that they introduced the idea that the Mandalorians of this time were experimenting with a new weapon called a Basilic War Droid. And guys, I'm going to be honest, I hope this makes it into canon one day because these things are awesome. Now, don't think of these as battle droids. That's not what these are. They're essentially mechanized dragons that Mandalorians ride from space into the atmosphere to plunder and pillage planets. So, like, that might sound a little weird. Maybe it doesn't sound as Star Wars-y, but I'm telling you, it's really, really cool to see, especially in the pages of comics and in, I believe, the second Knights of the Old Republic game. So, at the age of 13, Candarus actually went through a rite of passage by piloting his own Basilic War Droid. So, like most traditional Mandalorians, Candarus started his warrior ways from a young age. And warfare is a way of life for Mandalorians, and Candarus's early life is a prime example of this. They get started really, really early. Eventually, Candorus is recruited by the Mandalorian's new leader, Mandalore the Ultimate. And before Mandalore the Ultimate, the Mandalorian clans had been scattered and disjointed all across the galaxy. But Mandalore the Ultimate began uniting the clans again under what is known as the Neo-Crusaders. And we actually talked about the Neo-Crusaders on our Mandalorian History 101 episode. And this is a period of time where we see a lot of change going on with the Mandalorians in how their culture kind of shifts a little bit. And it's mainly because of outside influence. And we've talked about this before. When an outside influence affects Mandalorians, it means bad things for the galaxy. We see that in canon when Maul comes and he basically takes over Mandalore and changes the way the Mandalorians all start dressing. We see that they all start looking like Maul himself. It means bad things for the galaxy. Well, it's the same situation here with the Neo-Crusaders. Eventually, Candorus Ordo worked his way up to the rank of commander, and the new Neo-Crusaders conquered several Outer Rim planets just outside the borders of the Republic. More and more planets were falling to the Mandalorians, but the Republic refused to intervene, and the Jedi did not want to do anything about it. So you've got this growing presence on the Outer Rim of the galaxy where the borders of the Republic don't reach yet. And the clans have reunited, and they're taking over planet by planet. And the reason the growing Mandalorian problem was ignored was largely due to the fact that the Great Sith War had happened about 40 years prior to this. And the wounds of that war were still way too fresh for the Republic and even the Jedi. It's just something that they didn't want to get involved in because of it. The Republic and the Jedi thought it was a problem that they wouldn't have to deal with. So basically, they kind of just viewed the Mandalorians as, you know, that's what they do. They fight, they conquer. But it's not in the borders of the Republic, so it has nothing to do with us, which is, you know, I guess that could make sense from the standpoint of the Republic. You know, they don't want to intervene in that because it has really nothing to do with them. Those planets aren't theirs. So they shouldn't get involved. But it's interesting that the Jedi didn't want to get involved either. And you start to see the alignment of the Jedi and the political forces and in the Legends timeline. So Ordo actually made a name for himself in the first battle of Althea. And in the battle, Ordo showed his aggressive nature by breaking ranks and eliminating the enemy commander himself. And eventually, all of this led to what is known as the Mandalorian Wars. So if you're familiar with the game, you hear a lot about the Mandalorian Wars, and this is the Mandalorian Wars that they're talking about. The Mandalorians were itching for a fight with the Republic so that they could test their own strength. And with each planet raised, they were actually attempting to goad the Republic into a battle. Now, over the course of the Mandalorian Wars, the Mandalorians went from being very individualistic to fully embracing the Neo-Crusader way. So like they all began wearing the same types of armor with different color schemes. And you see that in the game. Like you see the blue armored Mandalorians, yellow armored Mandalorians, red armored Mandalorians. They all kind of look the same, but they still have that Mandalorian look. What's interesting to me is if you read the Knights of the Old Republic comics by John Jackson Miller, at the beginning of the Mandalorian Wars, they're all wearing different armor. Like they all have their own kind of armor. You see that in the pages and panels. You see some of them riding Basilisk war droids and stuff. And it looks like a hodgepodge of Mandalorians. There's no unity there except for the battle. You know, they're all fighting together against the Republic. And honestly, they kind of look like the Nile do in the High Republic stuff. The images that we've gotten out of that, they look a lot like the Nile. But over the course of the comic, you see them start to shift towards wearing all the same armor. They're all thinking and doing the same thing. They're losing their kind of individuality. as the war progresses. And it's kind of something interesting to think about, especially when you compare and contrast that with Maul and the Mandalorians. Now, the Republic just simply refused to get involved, but there was a growing movement in the Jedi Order to do something about this situation, but the Jedi Council was on the side of the Republic. They just did not want to do anything about it. But eventually, there was a tipping point. The Mandalorians entered Republic space and began to raise entire planets, like Republic planets. And Sirocco was the straw that broke the camel's back. The Republic was no match for the strength of the Mandalorian fleet and armies when they actually, okay, now we have to do something. So they end up fighting the Mandalorians. And when they do, it is not good. The Mandalorians just wreck them. And in every battle with the Mandalorians, the Republic is just being pushed back and back, and there's nothing that they can do. The Jedi Order continue to refuse to get involved in the war, but finally a Jedi Knight leading what was known as the Revanist movement disobeyed the council and led a group of Jedi Knights to assist the Republic. Now, we don't actually technically know his real name, but the Jedi Knight eventually became known as Revan because he's leading that movement. Now, Candace Ordo later expressed how impressed all the Mandalorians were with Revan's abilities, and they actually came to respect his strength. That's something like they saw something in Revan that they really, really respected, and he was what they were looking for in battle. That, like, they wanted to test themselves against a great enemy, and in that, Revan was totally a great enemy because he is just ferocious in battle. Especially for being a Jedi Knight. Now, Ordo was actually a part of the final battle of the Mandalorian Wars over a planet named Malachor V. Now, what's interesting, in canon, we actually have a planet called Malachor, and we see that in Rebels. It's not Malachor V, it's just called Malachor. And on that planet, there's a Sith temple, and Maul and Ahsoka are there, so is Vader. It's basically the season 2 finale. But we see evidence that there was a great battle, and Ezra even picks up a lightsaber that looks a lot like Kylo Ren's with the cross guards, but it's green, you know, so you get the sense like, oh, this was an ancient battle. So it was a little bit of a callback to this, but there's some differences for sure. So this is Malachor V, and this is, of course, Legends. It was there the Republic used a super weapon to destroy the Mandalorian fleet, and Revan killed Mandalore the Ultimate in single combat. And so because of this huge defeat, he was shamed by it. Candace Ordo left his wife and clan, and he actually went into exile. And he eventually ended up as a mercenary working for Davit Kang, where you find him in the game. And he's, of course, not wearing armor. And I'd say a lot of that is because he was so shamed by losing that battle. Of course, if you've played the game, you know he becomes a part of Revan's crew to help take down Darth Malak. And after the events of the game, Revan actually assisted Ordo in the search for Mandalore's mask. So here's what's cool about this. In Legends, whoever wore the mask of Mandalore was the leader of all the Mandalorians. So it was like this mask that was passed down from leader to leader, and they took on the title of Mandalore. Now, we actually see a version of this in canon, except it's not the mask. Instead, it's the darksaber. From what we understand in canon right now, whoever has the darksaber is the leader of Mandalore and considered the Mandalore. So it's interesting to think about, obviously, when Darth Maul had the darksaber, right? He was considered the leader of Mandalore. And Bo-Katan had it. And now we know Moff Gideon has it. So what does that mean for Mandalorians? You know, if it's the same type of thing with Mandalore's mask, do other Mandalorians have to follow him because he has the dark saber and he's wielding it? Does he have a contingent of Mandalorians who follow him and do his bidding because he wields that saber? I don't know. It's just something kind of interesting to think about, I think. So back to this, back to Legends. Revan believed that something was coming that the Republic would not be able to withstand after the events of the first game. And instead of attacking the Republic this time, Revan hoped that the Mandalorians would actually stand with and fight with the Republic under Candorous Ordo's leadership. Eventually, Candorous Ordo claims the Mask of Mandalore and takes up the title and mantle of Mandalore, the Preserver. So he actually is called Mandalore the Preserver after he claims the mask. And he begins the hard work of uniting the scattered clans. So when you meet him in Knights of the Old Republic 2, he's wearing his full Mandalorian armor once again. And he actually aids the main character by riding a Basilisk war droid into battle. He also leads a fleet with Karth Onassi to help defeat the Sith Lord Darth Nihilus, which he is a cool Sith Lord, may I add. And after the events of the game, not much is known about Candorous other than the fact that it appears he was largely successful in preserving Mandalorian culture and helped reunite the clans after the devastation of the Mandalorian Wars. And I think Candorous is just a good example of what it means to be Mandalorian. He's brutal, he's unforgiving in battle, yet there's something kind of honorable about him. And when it comes to time to make a decision, more than likely he's going to err on the side of good. So I hope you enjoyed this first installment of Legends of Mandalore. I know it's not super long. We're going to keep it around this time frame. It's just fun, short little blurbs of important Mandalorians in history and important battles in history. Mac will probably do the next one. We'll kind of trade off. Maybe sometimes we'll actually do one together. But this is just something quick, fun for us to listen to. And of course, if you're on the Patreon, you will get to listen to these first before they make it to the main feed. We appreciate you guys so much for listening. You guys mean the world to us, and we cannot wait. The closer we get to season two of The Mandalorian, it is going to be incredible. And we just hope that you guys enjoyed this very first installment of The Legends of Mandalore. So until then, keep the watch.